Okay, let's find out what's going on in the world of virology as we know it through the expertise and brilliant insights of Dr. Henry Nyman, who is back with us tonight. Hello, Henry. Were you out on the boots trail today with your raincoat, lurking, looking, learning? What were you doing?
I had class on Wednesday. They do class Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday. So I went to the school. There were virtually no cars there. And they still have class. They still are having sporting events. They still have crowds for the sporting events. And none of that's going to last. That's going to be a thing of the past within the next few weeks or so, I would guess. Numbers are going up here in Pittsburgh, at the University of Pittsburgh. I think they've got over 200 positive cases. I think they cut back on on-site classes, and universities with outbreaks are in the 2MTC category. So that's too many to count. So things will change very dramatically as far as cases are concerned. But
you know, I mentioned one thing last hour. Hold your thought. We do think, certainly, as Americans, about this country first. But these lockdowns and masks and other issues are worldwide. This is going around all over the world. And I mentioned Argentina last hour. I've got friends down there. And that country has been locked down tight. But still, the infections have spread. There is one couple down there, actually the parents of my friend, who have been under lockdown in their home for 6 months now. Straight 6 months in Argentina. And the father-in-law of my friend is, he got sick, went in the hospital, and got worse. Now he's on morphine and induced coma. He's intubated. He's on a ventilator. And he ain't getting out. Pretty obvious. So the same scenarios are playing all around the world, no matter what language is spoken, no matter where the country is. These things are just, it's worldwide. This is what we want to keep in mind somewhere in the back of our heads. Go ahead.
Right. And, well, for Argentina, they are in the southern hemisphere, so they would have been hit hard in their winter season. I still expect there to be a seasonal component to this. And so they would be hit hard because they're in the southern hemisphere, and they're close to Brazil. So Brazil was kind of feeding. So all of South America really is doing poorly. And that's why the number keeps going down. I mean, they keep saying the U.S. has 4% of the world's population and 25% of the COVID cases. It's down to about 20% of the COVID cases, in part because Brazil has gone up dramatically. India is now going up dramatically, and several countries in South America are high, including I think Argentina's one of them. Let me see what the latest is. So worldwide, it's there's now 28 million cases and over 900,000 deaths. And the current ranking now, U.S. is still number one. India has passed Brazil, so India is now number two.
Number two. Ah, interesting.
Right. Brazil's number three. Russia's number. Now, those two are close. I mean, the U.S. is at 6.5 million now, according to Worldometer. India's at 4.5 million, and Brazil's a little over 4 million. Then there's a fairly big drop to 1 million for Russia, And then there's Peru with 700,000, Colombia with almost 700,000, Mexico with over 600,000, South Africa with over 600,000, Spain with 500,000, and then Argentina with 500,000, and Chile with 400,000. So, you know, in the top 11 South America, there is Argentina and Colombia and Peru and Brazil. Mm-hmm. So there's four, and with Mexico right next door, there's five of the top 11 countries are in North America, south of the U.S. And so, it is worldwide. There are major issues, but, the U.S. has clearly done the worst job of controlling the virus. So they are number one, 6.5 million, with number one in deaths on Worldometer. It's getting close to 200,000. There are over 195,000 now. So we'll get to 200,000. Either this weekend or the beginning of next week.
Who was it that said, I hope we don't get to 200,000 the other day? Who was that? Some idiot newsman, I think.
Yeah, that was on cable news. They were reading when we hit 190,000 and said, I hope we don't get to 200,000. It's just totally crazy. So speaking of earlier this week, I did look up that story from the World Bank as far as kits from 2017 and 2018 for COVID 19
sales, allegedly.
And I mean, when you read the title, you know, it was in the No Way Jose category because the virus wasn't identified until the end of 1990, and to actually make a kit. The kits are very specific. So you need the sequence of the virus and you have to target specific regions so that it's going to be specific for that virus. It won't pick up other coronaviruses like MERS or various cold viruses. And so you really can't make the kit without the sequence. And there were no sequences before, really, a full sequence wasn't really available till the beginning of this year, until 2020. And like I said, if you did a search on that sequence in beginning of 2020, you got matches to SARS from 17 years ago. But there were no sequences in GeneBank. And so the idea kits were being exported in 2017, 2018. That were designed to detect COVID-19. The 19 has to do with it being identified in 2019 for the first time. Made no sense because there were no sequences, so you couldn't make a kit without the sequence. And those kits, when I took a look at it, were in multiple countries were exporting. And so, number one, there'd be no reason to export the kit because the virus wasn't known. So it wouldn't make any sense to be testing for a virus that nobody knew existed. And it was, you know, the title alone said it was some utter nonsense story. And I looked it up and it was an utter nonsense story. The guys that wrote it apparently have no clue what they're talking about. But if you looked at what they were actually quoting, it lists all the countries and it says they're exported and it gives the product code. And,
were the documents hoaxed, Henry? Let's get to the punchline here. Were they fake documents?
No. They were stupid interpretations. They don't know what they're talking about. They're real documents.
Uh-huh.
And the name of the document, the product description, is COVID-19 Diagnostic Test Instruments and Apparatus.
right?
You know what an instrument is? An instrument's not the kit. The instrument is how you do the assay. It's a thermocycler.
Understood.
It's been around since the 1980s. So
all right. Well,
countries
people
have
want to
been
know
exporting.
About the name, obviously. How did they come up with that name? That's the big question here. I didn't read it. I don't know. How'd they come up with COVID-19?
How did they come up with a name?
Allegedly in 2017, or is that false too?
No, it's equipment that can do the COVID-19 test. So in 2020, they went and they prepared this list of companies that were exporting these products, instruments and apparatus.
Right.
That means that this is a thermocycler that can do the PCR test for COVID-19. It's not the actual test. It's not the actual kit.
So this had nothing whatsoever to do with the year 2017 or 18 then. Nothing.
These were instruments that were exported in 2017 that were capable of being used with a kit made in 2020.
Were they talking
about? But they're capable of using any PCR test. It doesn't have to be COVID-19.
So they just happened to name it COVID-19. Is that what? What do I'm confused. Did they just happen to name it COVID-19? Well, help me out here. Did they just happen to name it COVID-19 in 2017? It's just a coincidence.
No, they named it COVID-19 in 2020.
Well, that's what I asked you earlier.
In 2020, they made...
You missed it.
They made a list. They made a list of companies that were exporting diagnostic instruments
that could
and apparatus.
Be used to diagnose COVID-19, but they were selling them in COVID-17 or 2017. But they didn't call it COVID-19 then. They're just saying that they were used in 2020
This is a report. This is a report that was made in 2020, and they went and they showed who was exporting kits and when they were exporting it. So they're showing that in 2019 that the European Union was exporting kits, the United States was, Germany was, Japan was, Singapore was, China was, Hong Kong was, Switzerland was, United Kingdom was, the Netherlands was, and France was. And they got 2018. So for 2018, they tell you how much value the kits had. They give you detail as to how much money each was, how much they weighed. It's just a report of what was exported in 2018 or in 2017 or in 2019 or in 2020 of a device that could read a COVID-19 test kit. And it was presented as if somehow these kits existed, so somehow they had the sequence back in 2018, and it's just nonsense.
I don't believe they had the sequence necessarily then at all. But I have to ask again, were these documents that show allegedly in 2017, the term COVID-19, were they actually using that in 2017? That's my question. That's the only question I have.
Well, no.
Okay.
They were using it in 2020 to tell you who was shipping stuff in 2018.
Right.
There was
and
no
they weren't calling
the name
it,
COVID. The name COVID didn't exist before 2020.
I got that.
It's not only the sequence didn't exist; the name didn't exist.
Right.
And they put this
myself.
Out. Yeah, I thought it was a crummy name in 2020, and I said so in 2020, because that's when they came up with the name.
Yes, we did.
So,
we both did.
Right. So these guys are putting out this stupid report is saying they're going to ask him for an explanation. It's idiotic. It says apparatus. And they're reporting it as kit.
As a kit. That's like, completely fallacious, that part understood. Yeah.
Okay. Right, right. So the kit itself wasn't made until 2020. And it was given that name. And then they said, well, here's this kit that was made in 2020. These were the companies that were exporting thermal cyclers that could be used with the kit to process the kit. So you get the kit. It's got the primers in there, and you put the sample in there, and then you take that little plastic container, and you put it in a thermal cycler, and you do a PCR test. So these were just devices that can do PCR. And they went and they had them listed so that people were interested in who was exporting the thermal cyclers if they wanted to get more information as to where these thermal cyclers might be so they'd know who would be able to do testing and what was the sources of the kits and who was making these thermal cyclers. And so that's what the list is from the World Bank. There's no mystery here. PCR has been around since 1980 something. Right. So the fact that the many companies were making thermal cyclers in 2018 or 2017 or 2019 or 2020, and they were capable of reading a kit that was designed to do PCR for COVID-19, they listed them. And they listed how much they weighed. They listed how much their wholesale price was. So you can see how much each country exported in a given year. So if you looked at it in 1980, it didn't say COVID-19 because because COVID-19 didn't exist in 2018. So when you read the title of these COVID-19 kits that were exported in 2018 and 2017, I said, that's nonsense. Just from the title. And then all you had to do is look at the link and see that it isn't for the kit. It's for the apparatus, which is another way of saying a thermal cycler. That this is what you
which can be applied to a number of different I understand
any it's PCR test. Right.
That's right.
And that's why all of these countries were making them back in 2018, because there were lots of PCR tests that were being done. They've been done since the 1980s, late 1980s. Anyway, that's what that story was. So the story is kind of headline and people say, oh, what's the World Bank doing exporting these kits 2 years ago? They must have known about the virus. And it's just nonsense.
Well,
it's
thank you
nonsense.
For straightening that out. Perfect. Perfect. It's what we need.
Okay.
It's what we're here for.
So back to today, the big news for today. Well, there are two pieces of big news. One was a serious problem with, the AstraZeneca vaccine.
And that is a serious one. We're going to spend time on this. I want all of you to pay attention because this is a big story.
Right. And the other one was a serious problem with Donald J. Trump's credibility.
What? There are a new theme. That's a new theme on this program.
Well, this is new data. And these are actually recordings.
Yeah, and, I got the story on that.
Pretty irrefutable, although I did hear Donald J. Trump actually deny that it was not his voice on the Access Hollywood tapes. I swear he's actually issued a denial on that, which I don't think it lasted very long, but it was It wasn't that long ago. It's a few months ago, I think, or maybe 6 months ago or so. But, but long after the fact that he started to raise questions as to whether that was really him on the tape. And he hasn't said anything about the Bob Woodward tapes not really being him. But so assuming that the recording that sounded like Trump really was Trump, it really blows his credibility. And you could take a lot of the misstatements that he was making and move them into the blatant lie category. But we'll go into that also. But anyway, let's go through the vaccine problem. And this really started last night when Stat News came out and said that the phase 3 trial by AstraZeneca had been halted due to one patient in the UK who had an adverse reaction to the vaccine. And there wasn't a whole lot of detail on that initial report other than it had been halted, and they didn't really give any details on that. And then the New York Times came out last night, and they suggested that this was due to, here is what it says. The individual said the volunteer in the UK had received a diagnosis of transverse myelitis, an inflammatory syndrome that affects the spinal cord and is often sparked by viral infection. So the New York Times last night was the first one to say that it was related to transverse myelitis. And then today there were reports that there was a brief halt in the phase 1 trial, but it was only for a day or so. And when I heard that, I thought that the key question was, why was it halted in the phase 1 trial? And Nature came out with a story this afternoon, and they said on the sheet that's given to volunteers for the phase 2-3 trial, it indicated that they had halted the trial earlier because of a patient that had developed transverse myelitis.
To describe transverse myelitis very simply, would you? Inflammation of the spinal column?
Right. It's an inflammation of the spinal column, and that interrupts the transmission, and so you can have numbness or problems with movement with either one or both sides that gets fed off of the spinal cord. The signals go, and
so it's kind of a cousin to meningitis, sort of.
Kind of a meningitis, or kind of like polio, kind of types of diseases that aren't necessarily permanent. They might just be temporary. So you can have inability to move limbs and things along those lines. So you're just not transmitting the signal the way it's supposed to be. And it's related to the inflammation, and it's usually reversible, but not always. So when the swelling goes down, then it kind of, goes away and they recover. So when I saw that the first trial had been halted for transverse myelitis, then that raised some serious questions as to how serious this was. Because, like I said, for the first one, they only halted the trial for a day or so. And this one, it wasn't clear how long this halt was going to go. That this was a patient in the UK. Stat News came out with an update, and they said that the participant was a woman in the United Kingdom who experienced neurological symptoms consistent with a rare but serious spinal inflammatory disorder called transverse myelitis.
Uh-huh.
And so when I heard that both halts were due to similar symptoms, that made it sound more serious, because for one, the phase one, there aren't that many people that participated. I think they ended up enrolling something like 350 people for the phase one. And so that's not a whole lot of people. And then they just started the phase three. And so the phase three was started in late August, which would mean that they haven't even given the second injection yet for those that are in the phase three. So that would mean that this woman developed these symptoms before she even got her second shot. So she just had one shot. And she was hospitalized.
All right. Well, what causes the itis in the myelitis, which is usually an infectious state? Are we talking viral, bacterial, something to do with the components in the phase three trial vaccine? I wasn't clear on that. I couldn't figure it out.
No, this would be an immune response to the vaccine, in all likelihood.
So cytokine thing, maybe?
Yeah. I mean, that's why I say it's somewhat like this polio, this flaccid myelitis, which has been associated more recently. It is not actually polio virus. It's the same class as polio, but it's another virus, a couple different ones. I haven't looked at it in a while. I think it's D something 68 is the one that seems to be causing the current problems. It seems to happen every other year, and it seems to be related to an immune response to the infection, and generally it's in children, they develop the paralysis after the infection. So by the time they develop the paralysis, they try to find the virus and they can't find the virus. But they did a study for antibodies, and most of these patients do have antibodies to the virus. I think it's DS68. But in any event, it would be a response to the virus. And so this would be the same thing, that this is likely to be due to a response to the vaccine itself. And and they did look at there's more detail on the current case. So they did check the current case, and she did get the vaccine. She didn't get the placebo, which is actually another vaccine, actually, but it's an approved vaccine. And so she did get the vaccine with the spike protein, and they're investigating it. And then they held a conference call this morning. AstraZeneca did, the CEO it was the CEO, held a conference call, and he did indicate that in the in the phase one trial, they did further investigation of that case, and they thought that the symptoms were due to MS, multiple sclerosis, and it wasn't due to the vaccine. But, you know, I think that that's kind of an interpretation, and it could be that it's really both. It could be that this patient had MS, and that made them more susceptible to develop, you know, to end up having this type of reaction right. to the vaccine.
Okay, so how does this relate to the other vaccine trials that are ongoing? What kind of things can we extrapolate from this bump in the road?
Okay, well, here's the extrapolation. This virus is a chimpanzee adenovirus. The other trials, like Moderna, is very similar to this trial, except they use a human adenovirus.
Uh-huh.
But the evidence that it's not the adenovirus is the same system was used to make an Ebola vaccine. And in the Ebola vaccine, they didn't have any cases of transverse myelitis. So it doesn't seem that the carrier itself is causing the problem. It seems more likely that the spike protein is causing the problem. So that's about as much as you can extrapolate at this stage, because in that sheet that was given to the volunteers for the phase 2-3, they say that the system has been used previously, and the only side effect, serious side effect that was seen was this one patient that was in the phase one trial for COVID-19. So they are essentially said that they didn't see this condition arise in the Ebola trial and approval. I'm pretty sure that vaccine was actually approved. And, and so this is something that was seen for the first time in the phase one of this trial. So the reason it's concerning is because, like I said, this phase three just got started. So the number of patients that have actually received this vaccine is pretty small. And they usually break them up into different groups. And, it's not clear, how old this patient was to develop the symptoms or whether there were any other issues with this patient that contributed to it. But, if it's somewhat age dependent, there would be even an even smaller number of people that had similar age and, just fell into the same category, the ones that developed the symptoms. The phase one was male, the phase two was two, three was female, and they said the phase one identified MS in that patient, and they really haven't said a whole lot about this patient other than she was hospitalized. The first patient was not, and but she was improving and may actually be discharged later today, is what they said this morning. I haven't seen anything.
Did they indicate any form of treatment for this?
I think they usually treat with like steroids or something, something to tap down the immune response.
Knock the inflammation down. Okay, I get it.
Yeah. So, but the reason I think is a major concern is, it wasn't in the other trial, which kind of suggests it may be the spike protein. If it's a spike protein, it probably doesn't matter whether it's a chimpanzee adenovirus or a human adenovirus. It's probably the immune response to the spike protein itself. and therefore there could be a similar type of issue with that spike protein in any of the delivery systems. All of the delivery systems have at least a component of the spike protein. Now, I think one of the trials actually only uses the receptor binding domain of the spike protein, whereas this one, I believe, uses the entire gene. And so the one with the receptor binding domain may elicit a somewhat different immune response and potentially wouldn't cause this type of problem. But the bottom line is probably from the spike protein and is probably due to the immune response. And if it is, that makes it difficult because, I mean, you're trying to get an immune response. And so it's a matter of, you know, whether you're getting too strong a reaction to it and how common it is. And the worry is that there really haven't been that many patients tested so far. The goal is to test 30,000. There's 10,000 or so in the UK. There's also trials going, or there were, they've all been halted, but they've halted the trials in the US, Brazil, and South Africa. So all of those countries are participating in this phase 3 trial with AstraZeneca. And
but they're all, those are all adenovirus.
They've all been halted.
They're all adenovirus predicated vaccines.
No, the ones I'm mentioning where they're halted, they're all AstraZeneca. So they're all essentially the same chimp adenovirus vaccine.
Oh, okay. So they were using theirs.
I don't think the other trials have been halted. So Moderna hasn't halted their trial, which they're also using adenovirus, but the human adenovirus is not a chimpanzee adenovirus. And so we'll see. It's just been, you know, it's only been two cases so far, but, you know, there's nowhere near, you know, 30,000 people that have been given this vaccine. They just started the phase 3 in the UK, and they're ahead of the other three countries where they've, are going to be doing this. So to my knowledge, I'm not sure whether anybody's gotten their first shot yet, even. And I don't think anybody's got the second shot. And the halt means that they're not going to get it until they resume. So, you know, the people that have signed up for this, and are scheduled to get their first shot, they're no longer scheduled to get their first shot.
How much does this set the whole vaccine effort back?
Well, like I say, it really depends on what the cause is. If this person ends up having MS or something, and then they'll say, well, yeah, it doesn't work well on people that have MS, but it works well on others. So it really depends on A, how long before this one resumes, and then B, the others probably aren't going to do a halt, but if they end up developing the same thing, if they have a patient that has the same symptoms, then they're going to be forced to do a halt. And then, you know, the numbers change, you know, can change the significance very dramatically. That if Moderna all of a sudden says, well, we saw the same thing, and then, you know, there's not, it could still be adenovirus, but it's not chimpanzee versus human. And then if another trial that isn't using adenovirus has the same thing, then it's probably the spike protein. And then if it's the spike protein, then that could be a big issue. You know, and some of it depends upon what the frequency is and how reversible it is. But it's real hard. If you're at the very beginning and you're starting getting this type of adverse effects, which in some cases can be very serious, it doesn't necessarily reverse right away, then, there'll probably be a lot of emphasis on some of the other trials. I believe there's 9 different phase 3 trials that have started, or at least they're enrolling people into the trials. I'm not sure how many have already got a dose. So that's good. Where the vaccine effort is, but it could be a significant. It could cause a halt of this particular trial, period, and move in the direction of some of the other ones.
Uh-huh.
So that's kind of the vaccine story. Now on Trump's story, that was quite damaging because it was clear that it wasn't that Trump wasn't briefed on what's going on with the coronavirus or how serious is it. He not only was briefed, but he understood it well enough to explain it to Bob Woodward on tape. And so he said that, it was a serious issue, that the virus was transmitted through the air. It's airborne. It's not what you touch. All you have to do is breathe the air to get infected.
What date was this interview? Do we remember? Excuse me. What date was the interview approximately? I can look it up.
Exactly February 7th. It was February 7th.
That's awfully early, isn't it? Wow.
Yeah. Well, when he repeated it to Bob Woodward. I believe he was briefed on it the end of January.
Yeah.
I think it was January 28th, 29th or so. And he not only knew that it was airborne, but he also knew, he said that the fatality rate was 5 times higher or more than influenza. So he knew that it was fatal. He knew it was easily transmitted. Not that much later, he knew that it affected young people. It wasn't just old people. And it was pretty clear that he knew what was going on. He wasn't responding to questions by Bob Woodward. He was explaining to Bob Woodward what the latest was on the virus. So he was explaining to him what his understanding was, and his understanding was that it was serious. And his excuse was that he wanted to downplay it because he didn't want to cause a panic. And he said that, that's the reason he downplayed it initially, and that's the reason he continues to downplay it. So he's telling Bob Woodward that he knows it's a problem. He knows it's a big problem. He was told that this is going to be the biggest problem of his presidency. And so he was well aware of the magnitude of the problem. And then they got all these clips of, saying, it's just the flu. It's not that big a deal. We've got it under control. It's not going to be a problem. It's going to disappear in April. There's only 1 or 2 initially. We've got things well under control, blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm.
So his public statements are saying they started with it as being a hoax. First it's a hoax, then it's not that big a deal, then it's kind of like the flu, then it's just the elderly, no problem for younger people, and all of those things are contradicted by what he said to Bob Woodward, who has it on tape. It's not just him recollecting it and arguing about what he really said and what he really, and what he was said. He said you can actually hear him say those things on the tape. And
I guess this means you're probably not going to vote for him, Henry.
And it's still ongoing. Well, I said a while ago this guy was the most dangerous person in the world, and that he was anti-science. So he's not on the
you
top
said,
of my
yes.
list.
And
the point is that he continues to do these various events. The latest from the bikers now is there was a study.
Don't pick
that
on the
done.
Bikers. I've got a Harley, and I listen. You're gonna have to get past me.
No,
go ahead. Go ahead. All right.
Not the bikers, but the biker, whatever it was, event, you know, in South Dakota.
Sturgis.
Sturgis. Right, Sturgis. That there's a report that did a study of Sturgis, and mm-hmm. they did it with anonymous cell phone pings.
Right.
And so they basically had the records of, you know, who went to Sturgis, where they went when they left Sturgis. And essentially the study was to find out what counties they went to and then compare the rate of infections in that county after they got there to
right.
corresponding counties that had similar demographics and similar incidence of virus. And then in the 1 month after they got there, the incident rates were dramatically different in the counties that the attendees went to versus the counties the attendees didn't go to. And they made a huge estimate. I mean, they were estimating that this led to 250,000 cases or 20% of all the cases in the month after Sturgis, and they were in the counties that the attendees of the attendees of Sturgis went to, and South Dakota now has the highest per capita rate of COVID in the country. They're now number one in the U.S. as far as per capita incidence of COVID. And the governor says, oh, I don't believe the studies. How could this be? Da, 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 da. And I think they ended up counting something like 460,000 people ended up attending this over the 10-day period or so. And even though the motorcycles were outside, you know, there were... The town only holds 7,000, I guess, and so the venues were crowded, and they weren't all outside, and it was kind of an idea. It was quite an experiment. See what happens when you put 500,000 people together in a little town that holds 7,000 and keep them there for 10 days and see if they get sick. And the answer is, according to the study, they get sick and they carry the virus back to wherever they originated from.
Oop. Let's get him back. We've got a couple minutes here. Okay. There are a couple of different stories about Sturgis and the results. I don't think we're there yet. Bottom line, though, here it is, September 9th already. Wow. Moving right along. So less than 2 months until the election. Go ahead, Henry.
So I'm back. Sorry. I don't know what happened. But in any event, the numbers were very high for that. And I think that's just a sign of what's going to be happening with the schools. The virus does transmit easily. And right now, the numbers today is back over 1,000 dead again. It's 1,125 today. The number of cases is down a little bit because of the top three states are down, but I think that's partially testing, and that still might be some of the effects from the three-day weekend as far as getting all the cases rounded up and reported. I expect those numbers will probably go up. There are over 30,000 cases today. Mm-hmm. And like I say, 1,100 deaths, And for the rest of the week, it'll probably be over 1,000 each day. Trump says it turned a corner, but the deaths are still up there. And even if the cases are down a little bit, they're not really reflective of what's going to happen with all the colleges. So
that's right. For the next
sending
week,
the kids,
no more.
This,
yeah,
well, kids back to school is just going to spread the virus, and the numbers will continue going up.
It's going to be a tough month, I'm sure. Thank you, Henry. Get some rest, and talk to you soon next time.
Okay. Very good.
Okay.
Take care.
Good night. Bye-bye. All righty. Good night. Henry's here Monday, Wednesday, Friday as we watch this go through the summer into the fall. And I guess it's officially after the end of summer now. Labor Day was it. Okay. Back tomorrow night. Wednesday night is tonight. That means tomorrow. I can't believe it. Thursday already. Wow. Okay, some really interesting things on tap for tomorrow night. Hope to have the pleasure of your company then. Be well.